This is the start of the second and final tape of the November 11th, 1986 interview with netmaker Coster Bougier of Apalachicola, Florida. The interviewer is David Taylor.
You hear my dog in there barking?
No.
I got a Rottweiler in there. Weighs about 95 pounds.
Well, I heard about your dog. I guess Nancy saw it, or someone else was telling me about it.
He can stay inside.
He don't bother nobody. He's a big old baby.
You do any cable splicing here, too?
No, I don't fool with no cable now.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. That is the nastiest job in the world. Just for soon you'll get your hands cleaned up pretty good and somebody wants you to splice a cable. I don't like that. My son's got a son that's a cable splicer, splice a cable good. But I never did like it, and I would never fool with it.
Mm-hmm.
A fella asked me one time I was shrimping, says, you splice your cable? I said, I guess I can tangle it up with a hole anyway. I ain't much of a cable splicer. Something you don't like, you won't learn.
Yeah. Are there people around here who do that for fishing?
Oh, yeah. There's people that splice cable. I got a vise and everything. And I let a fella have it, and he still got it. But I had a son-in-law with a crackerjack cable splicer. He's a big old heavy boy. You know, he just grab it and pull it in there.
Mm-hmm. What's his name?
He lives in Alabama. His name's Joyner.
Yeah.
He's in the seafood business out there, Bow River.
Mm-hmm.
Here comes that cat, Mama. You want something to eat again? You wait on him to catch a rat, he'll starve to death.
Well, thanks very much. My name is David Taylor, and this is Marcus Hepburn.
Hi,
great to meet you.
I'm his wife, Marlene.
Carry him and feed him, Mama. Watch him. He'll run up and bite on the foot in a minute.
It's a healthy cat.
Yeah.
Ooh.
He's getting hungry, too.
Yeah. Watch the other one take off. That never belongs to the boy on the corner down there. He doesn't even belong to me. Stays over here all the time. We feed him. He's still following you.
We own one dog and one cat. That's what we own.
Well, you own that little one.
We didn't own it, but it was dumped
down here on.
Yeah.
So is that
not
there? What's
it again? Hoping it's dinner time or something.
Yeah.
Have they had any other real bad hurricanes here?
Well, down through the years, yes, sir. This is a bad spot here for hurricanes. My grandmother, she's dead and gone now. She's about 90 when she died. She said the worst hurricane ever hit this country was November the 7th, 1906. Drowned two seine boat crews on St. George's Island. The water got so high, that was what happened. The river was high, and that hurricane comes from the southeast, and the water backed up. The lighthouse keeper, in order to survive, he took his wife and kids and went up in the lighthouse. Water completely covered all those islands. That's how high it got. She said there was water all uptown, up there by the old cemetery, you know, and it's way up on top of that hill.
Gracious.
But I used to leave here, you know, and go out to Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana shrimping. And I rode Frederick out. That was a bad hurricane. I know you heard of it.
Yeah.
What was that? The late 70s?
No, it's back in the 70s. Oh, it was a bad one. I missed that Camille. It was coming. I knew it was coming, so I got on my boat and I come to Florida. When it come down in the Gulf, well, I come home. And I'm glad I did, because, man, well, I was at Gulfport at the time. It tore that place up.
Yeah.
That time of Hurricane Frederick, was that the worst weather you were ever in your boat?
Well, I've been in some bad weather, all right. But when Frederick was coming out, I was working out of Gulfport, and I left Gulfport. I was going to go to Biloxi and go up to Biloxi River, you know, and get up the Industrial Canal,
mm-hmm.
where there's a high bank. I knew the water was going to get high. I figured it would, but it didn't. We was on the back side of the hurricane. The water got low.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got a 120-mile-an-hour wind that blew all the trees down. We run the bow of the boat up on the bank, you know, and put the anchor cable out around a big pine tree. But going over there, it was pretty rough in the sound, you know, and I had my son with me then, the oldest boy. He was sitting in the pilot house door, and he says, "Daddy, I see a man in the water over there." I said, "Oh, you don't see." You know, like I say all the time, "Yeah, I do, too." He held up his hand when he come up on that swell. I looked, and I couldn't see nothing. Mm-hmm. I looked. And the other boy come over there and said, I see him. And I still couldn't see him. I was looking so hard, I guess. So finally, I seen him. And we stopped and picked him up. It was two soldiers from that air base at Biloxi. What is the name of that?
Jeez,
airfield. They was going to Ship Island in a canoe now, and a hurricane coming. And it sunk. He said, "My buddy's around here somewhere." And what was so funny about that, there were six boats ahead of me. I was the last one in the string, and they missed seeing them.
Yeah.
But I made a big circle where I picked that other boy up and went around and around. I found the other one about 2 miles from him.
Mm.
And it was kind of getting rough then. But you see, Gulfport don't have any natural harbor. It's just got a seawall there, and the water just breaks over it. Bad place.
Mm-hmm.
But we weathered that one out there right there in that Industrial Seaway Canal, right by where the man that makes them winches, McElroy Winch Company. We right behind that place there.
Mm.
Boy, it was a bad hurricane.
Mm.
But I've seen some hit here that is really bad, too. Well, what makes it bad here, back in the 40s we had one. It was 1949 or 50, right after the war.
Mm-hmm.
There was twisters in it. And, you know, and the hurricane wasn't so bad, but we got several twisters ahead of it. And it tore the front porch off my mama's house and blew the chimney off. And my daddy had a brand new pickup truck, and it blew the cedar tree on down on top of it. And it just turned all them houses over around the schoolhouse. It just turned them upside down.
Mm-hmm.
But that old big house just stood there and trembled. Tore all the locks off the doors. The pressure got so great on the inside.
Yeah.
And that old house just stood there and shook. And my mother, she went over to the gymnasium, and me and the old man stayed home. I wasn't married then. He said, "Look here, I want to show you something." He had his weather glass over the fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about 7 or 8 tenths down. That's the lowest I ever seen it fall. And it was just a trembling.
Mm-hmm.
The old man said, there's a twister coming. I didn't believe him. But about 2 minutes it hit, and it just tore everything up.
Could you hear it?
You could hear it, because it sounded like a freight train coming.
Mm-hmm.
We had one out here, too. You come out here and there was a block church down there. It tore it down and turned all these trailers over.
Mm.
You know. Mm. It tore the roof off of my house. I had to put more shingles up there.
Mm-hmm.
But it come right straight across the air base over here.
Mm.
It was a bad one. Mm-hmm. It's hedge hopping, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was two or three trailers over there that just rolled them over. And my wife, I was down at the dock. And my wife said that it pulled all the chest of drawers open in the house, the dresser drawers. She said the air was full of clothes,
mm-hmm.
just flying around in the air, scared her to death.
Jeez.
Then when she heard it coming, she thought it was a big truck, you know, coming, mm-hmm. pulling a trailer or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that twister.
Scary. Marcus, what was that weather sign some fisherman was talking to you about the other day?
Yeah, Sundog.
Sundog?
Yeah. It's a little spot in the sky, but who is it? Lloyd Davis.
Yeah, as an old fisherman, yeah.
They were saying that.
That used to be the toughest man in the world. I remember when I was a young man, he had an old shrimp boat, and the cabin leaked. and it just poured. That man would sleep down in the floor. The old boat wouldn't even see him now. He'd put him 3 or 4 2x6s in the floor, and he'd sleep at a piece of tar paper he'd cover with. And the rain would rain on him, running the water. Ask some people about it. You couldn't kill him with an axe handle. Mm. Tough man. Mm. Back in the old days. He's really tough. Never wore no shoes, one at a time.
You ever hear anything about sun dogs?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do they
mean?
Well,
mackerel backs, too. Sign of bad weather.
Mackerel backs?
Yeah.
Cloud?
Cloud formation, you know, back like a mackerel.
Are there other things in nature that you look at to help you tell what the weather was going to do?
Yeah, I guess so. Different thing, the wind, velocity and direction. If you, you know, before any chain come out, you always have a heavy southeaster. Comes out before the chain gets there. And I tell you one time, though, we got, like they got it, there's a hurricane. And back then, they didn't have no radios, you know. And the hurricane come ashore on the East Coast. And this was hurricane season. The wind started coming out the north hard, and I told them boys, I said, the glass was starting to fall, you know, the barometer a little bit. I said, there's something wrong. What do you mean something wrong? I said, you ain't never heard of a norther this time of the year. Mm. And had little boats in, you know, shallow draft boats. But, man, you couldn't even cross the bay. There was such a sea out of the north. So I went up in Big Bow, you know, on the island, waited it calmed down. But that hurricane come clean across the state, come out the north. Caught all them fellas outside, and they couldn't get home. Some of them drove the boat so hard they had to put them on the railway. Drove all the cotton out of them. You're beating a boat like that in the sea, you drive all the cotton out. That's a lot of it, too. A lot of them fellas don't take no precautions. They don't respect the weather, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They think they're on a battleship or something. They drive it right on out from under them.
Yeah.
Always respected the weather. I guess that's why I lived so long.
Mm-hmm.
You don't make but one mistake out there. That's all it takes is just one.
Yeah. Sometimes when I'm talking to fishermen, I think probably, Marcus, when you have two the different communities, there'll be things, sort of beliefs that fishermen have about things that will bring them good luck and bad luck.
Oh, yeah.
There are many things like that people
yeah.
know about.
I'm one of the worst about it. I hate to say it, but I'm one of the worst. I don't know if there's anything to it. I would always said, why take chances?
Yeah?
Yeah.
What types of things would you think about?
Well, I was brought up never to talk about alligators on the boat. The old man would have a fit. He'd never turn a hatch upside down. He'd have a fit about that. That was two things. That and whistling. He didn't want you whistling. He'd tell you you're going to whistle up a wind. Just keep on. And them three
whistling?
Things. Huh?
You say whistling?
Whistling, yeah. He didn't want you whistling. And I never will forget one time we was catching shrimp. We caught so many we had the whole of the boat full. Couldn't get no more in there. I had all the bins full. So I took one of the hatch covers and turned it upside down. It was making me a shrimp shoot out of it. And just mm-hmm. let them slide in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And he come back then, he seen that boy, he got mad. He says, we probably won't even make it back to the dock. Something will happen, but it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he didn't want you turning no hatch over. He didn't want nothing painted blue on that boat either.
Mm-hmm.
No blue paint. No suitcases.
No women.
And no women.
Anything you did for good luck?
Well?
Yeah, don't go out on Friday.
Nobody went out on Friday.
Yeah?
No Friday. It was all right to work on a Friday if you was out there, but don't start no trip on a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
You might have eye trouble. Ain't nothing wrong with your ears.
I grew up in Maine, and there.
Oh, that's
say
beautiful
some
country.
Of the same things up there, too. Especially the thing about the color blue.
I went
blue.
To submarine school at New London, Connecticut.
Did you?
Yeah. That's a pretty place mm-hmm. during the autumn.
So you were in submarines during the war?
Yes, sir, during the war.
What was your job on the submarine?
I was a machinist mate, mm-hmm. motor machinist mate.
What do you like about network?
Well, that just, it's sort of a challenge. You get a hold of some nets that's too old to pieces, and somebody say, well, that can't be fixed. You know, I used to fix it, and it's mighty bad if I can't. If it's all there, I can. If it ain't all there, like this one here. Mm-hmm. See if I put all that new stuff in it? That was gone. Mm-hmm. This whole bottom line's gone. That's a new line I put in.
If I had a dozen shrimp trawls and I put them out here on your lawn, could you pick out yours?
Yeah.
What would you look at to tell you?
Well, I guess to be the design mm-hmm. Or the workmanship or the knots. It'd be something. Everybody's got a different method. Mm-hmm. And I didn't build this net. Here, another man built this net. Now, that net right there, if I built that size net, I'd have another 5 pounds of webbing in it mm-hmm. that he ain't got. See how skinny it is mm-hmm. down there? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Of course, some of the older fishermen, you know, retired, but that you would consider real good fishermen when they were fishing.
Well, all that old bunch is dead, just about it. No hands. I got an uncle that's retired, and he's pushing 80 years old, but he's better shape man and plays golf every day. He was a good fisherman in his time.
Uh-huh. Where does he live?
Up here on 20. What would it be? 22nd Street.
Mm-hmm. What's his name?
Spiro Bougie. Spiro, just like that.
Uh-huh.
S-P-E-R-O.
Right.
That was my daddy's brother. He didn't have but one brother. He was a good fisherman in his time. Well, there's not many of that old bunch there. That old man J.D. Shells was a good fisherman in his time. He's in his 80s.
Is he a relative of Walter Shell?
Yeah, his brother.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Old man Wilma Deason was a good fisherman in his time.
Wilma?
Yeah, W-I-L-M-A.
Deason?
Deason, D-E-A-S-O-N. He was a good fisherman. That's some of those old hands. Mm-hmm. And one more. We call him Frog Ross. His real name's Arthur. Old man Arthur Ross was a good fisherman. Mm-hmm. Well, that's about all the... Let's see if I overlooked any of the old...
Does hands. Arthur Ross live here in Anaheim?
Yes. He lives on 15th Street. Be on 15th. My mother lives on 14th. She lives on one corner, and he lives on the left of her on the opposite corner. Mm-hmm. Let's see if there's any more. There's people like me and Walter. We all come along about the same time. Dave Silver. John James, we all come along about the same time. These fellas were before us, I'm talking about. They was fishing back there, running boats during the Depression. That's a plane going to the airport, I believe, coming from it once.
Make a lot of noise.
I watched that Blue Angel crash right over there one day.
Oh, my.
I was out here in the yard when he come over, and one plane was right with him, and I seen him when he shot himself out the plane. The chute never did open. It trailed out of his pack. When my wife had gone to town, didn't have no car, and I run around there, right down here, and you turn the corner, right where that trailer's parked.
Mm-hmm.
But he went down that yard over there. But when he was still in his chair when he hit a fence on the opposite side of the road, and it threw about the chair out in the highway, and he was still alive when I got there.
Hmm.
And I run down to the next house and called a doctor, but he was dead by the time the doctor got there. Hmm. He hit so hard it busted toes out of his flight boots.
Jeez.
I sure hated that, too.
I bet you.
If he could have stayed in the air another 3 seconds, he'd have made it that runway. But he fell short of the runway about, not a half a mile, a quarter of a mile, I imagine.
Something went wrong with his engine.
Same engine trouble, and they tried to get him to bail out over the bay, and he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
He's afraid the plane might crash into something, so tried to save the plane. His name was Lieutenant George Neal.
How long ago was that?
Oh, it's been, it must have been 15 years ago, 16 years. It's been quite a while back.
Well, that's something you wouldn't forget.
I sure won't forget. Sure hated that.
Yeah.
That. They had been to an air show in Tampa and was going back to Pensacola, I believe, when it crashed.
Yeah, I guess it's not every day somebody falls out of the sky.
Yeah.
In your backyard? Can you explain what those sticks are you were showing us before?
Yep, hanging sticks. That's the distance of that hanging, see? If you make it too long, that webbing would be too tight. Mm-hmm. And you make it too slack, it'd be too slack. Has to be just right. That's an inch and three-quarter net. And it's hung on 3 3/4 inches. As the webbing gets smaller, the ties get shorter.
Do you have a bunch of, you have a bunch of those sticks? With the
I got a whole bucket full over there. Mm-hmm. And, all them nets is hung different. Right. Some of them cutout nets, especially where it's barred, you have to hang that on one stick, and then the points on one. It's all different. Complicated.
What's this metal?
That's the top off that dip tank where I dip them nets. I put it to keep the rainwater out of it.
Oh, yeah, this big black thing over here.
The old black thing, I just stick them nets in there and dip them. Feed them.
Did there used to be a rope or twine making company?
Yeah, there was a net company right there across from Sizemore's there. That used to be the old ship channeler when I was a boy, ship channeler. He sold things to fit out sail ships, blocks and rope, and lanterns and all kind of stuff.
How long has that twine shop been out of business?
About 3 or 4 years.
What happened there?
Well, that fella Copeland, had a net shop. He bought it and he couldn't make
Weefings,
a go out of it.
Yeah, down by Weefings?
Yeah. Well, he bought it and it had this old obsolete equipment in there, wore out machines. They had one boy that could run that mess. He's the only one that could run it. And I think him and Copeland couldn't get along. Copeland thought he could run it to find somebody to run it, but he couldn't. But that old boy had to work on them things every night. The machines built 1919, he told me. And they were wore slap out. And something would break, you'd have to build a piece for it. You couldn't buy nothing for it. And I think that's what really happened.
Yeah.
What does that machine make?
Webbing, just like a loom. All the twine, is up on spindles and it knits that webbing.
Like what you're using now?
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
I was peeking through the window.
That machine was built in Paris in 1919, I believe. I seen the plate on him. I was in there one day and he was showing me how they was all wore out. All the bushings, were shot. And he had to be mighty careful, the mashes wouldn't be square.
Does Copeland still own that building and all that stuff?
I believe so, yes. Yeah.
He live here in town still?
No, he lives up there in Bristol, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
On a farm or something up there.
Well, that's interesting.
But them old machines was worth slap out to what it was.
Yeah.
How wide did it knit?
Well, it knit 100 mashes deep. And as wide as they wanted, it just run off in a box, see?
Oh.
When he got a box full, when he figured he had 100 pounds, he cut it off, started a new one. Or they put it in bales, baled it up like cotton. Some would be 200-pound bales. And they made his own twine there, too, spun his own twine. All they had spinning machines spin the twine. Got the nylon filament, and he'd spin his own twine. But it wasn't a grade of twine as this. This is the best twine you can buy right there. Get a ball of that right there. That's made by Browning, Nycor.
Yeah.
That's good twine.
How many nets would you make in a year these days?
Oh, my goodness, I don't know. I'd make several.
Yeah.
It differs, you know. Sometimes you make, most of my work's really repair work. Mm-hmm. I'll make some of these nets, but most of it's repair work.
Do you do all that work right here?
Right here. Yeah. I haven't done nothing lately because business been slack. If the shrimpers don't make no money, I don't make none.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because they don't have no money to buy nothing with. Everything costs so much money now.
Yeah.
To build one of them 50-foot bib nets that them boats drag costs $700. Hmm. Is the cost.
Just for the
materials?
That's labor and all.
Yeah.
A lot of webbing in them, and you have to buy the cable and the bag. The bag costs $100 on one of them nets. Hmm. And then you figure $10 an hour labor while you're building it. Take around 3 days to build one. A lot of sewing, especially that inch and a half like this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of knots to tie in that. When an inch and three quarters, you don't have all that much. See?
Mm-hmm.
Make a lot better time.
Yeah. What are the most popular net designs amongst fishermen around here?
I believe cutouts is what most of them use.
Mm-hmm. What is it makes a cutout net different from other types?
Well, it's the way it's built. It's instead of cutting the pieces out, you know, and sewing them together, it's all cut out of one piece of webbing.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't exactly explain it to you. If you was building one, say you'd, instead of wearing flat nets, you'd cut the wings out and sew it out, all that mess together. That you don't do it. It's all cut into that one piece.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just cut it out.
And rather than sewing in panels,
sewing in pieces, it's cut in.
I guess. Okay. So the shape of it is such that it fits into the other piece with fewer overall pieces.
Uh-huh. Give you an example. Now this, a cutout net. That's made right there. See, there's the wings and the corner pieces is already cut into it. That's just one piece. It's got one seam running down each side. Mm-hmm. Where that net's got four seams running down each side.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you make a drawing like this every time?
Every time I build a net, I make a pattern. Mm-hmm. And I keep that pattern. If I ever get that net back and it's tore up, I know exactly what to do.
Uh-huh. So what do you have to write down now in this so that you've got your basic information?
All right, and it's got a 45 mash wing on the top.
Mm-hmm.
That's a small net, 20 foot. It got a 30 mash wing on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's got 70 bars cut back in the bottom and 30 on the top. So it's got 40 more bars cut back in the bottom. See?
By bars, is that the count of the mesh?
Down? Yeah, that's my bars. All right, this is a bar, see? One strand.
Right.
By bars, I mean cut like this, 1, 2, 3, 4,
mm-hmm.
and I cut that piece out, see?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else you got down there that you
need to know? Well, this corner piece, see? You got 20 sets of 2 and 1s there. That's, I cut 2 points. This will be a point right here, see?
Mm-hmm.
1, 2. All right, then I'd cut 2 bars.
Mm-hmm.
2 and 2. And it tapers it like this, see, gradually, long. Well, that makes that corner right there round.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
When they hang that rope around it, it'll be round. It won't come square mm-hmm. like that, see?
Mm-hmm.
That's why that's in there.
Now, with these cutouts, this is the top here?
Yes, sir.
Does this kind of wrap around and
this,
fasten right
this one here sews to this one.
Mm-hmm.
You start right here on this corner, sew it down each side,
hmm.
and then you got it.
But with the other nets, would there be like side panel pieces?
Yeah, there'll be a strip running down. But I'll give you an example. See here? See this strip right here?
Mm-hmm.
That's the wing in that net. That's the corner piece, see?
That kind of folds
yeah,
up
yes.
like this
uh-huh.
on the
yes.
the side of it. And with the cutout,
it
wraps
cut out
around.
The seams in the side.
I get it. Right in the middle, I suppose.
Yes, sir. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there's another net with a wing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a bib net. You see how that's cut out there? That's a big net. size. It's 62 foot net. All right, so you put 75 meshes on the top of the wing. You go down to 75 bars, and you cut them 32 sets of two and two. See, that makes it round.
Mm-hmm.
For the bottom, you put 40 on the bottom. 210 bars, then you cut it. And 250 points.
Mm-hmm.
That's got 100 points, see, on each side. That's a bib net.
Mm-hmm.
Is that understand
what,
that?
Is that what people sometimes call mongoose net? You ever hear of that term?
Yeah, well, fella started that on the East Coast. Billy Burbank come out with that. And they call them Siamese nets.
Hmm.
But they didn't come from Siam. They were built right here.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. We've got a lot of patterns
in there. So.
Oh, my goodness.
The 35-foot cutout.